Listener-supported St. Gabriel Catholic Radio AM 820 brings you Answering the Call, offering a glimpse into the spiritual journeys of local priests, deacons, and religious. And now, Answering the Call with Elizabeth Ficicelli.
Hello, and thanks for joining us here on Answering the Call on St. Gabriel Catholic Radio AM 820, streaming live at stgabrielradio.com. I am Elizabeth Ficicelli. You know, a call to religious life can come at any time. Sometimes it comes early in life, sometimes later. And though my guest today might be considered a later life vocation, we're going to see that the seeds for her vocation were actually planted in her heart quite early. Her name is Sister Barb Kane. She is a Dominican Sister of Peace, and she's here today on Answering the Call to talk about her vocation. So welcome to St. Gabriel, Sister Barb.
Thank you, Elizabeth. It's great to be here.
Thank you for joining us today. And Sister, I know you grew up in Newark, Ohio, so not far, in a pretty Catholic family. So why don't we start there? Tell us a little bit about your family and how they practice the faith at home.
Well, my father was a lifelong Catholic, and my mom was actually a convert. And we were very regular about our church attendance. We went every Sunday. We also, all my brothers and I, went to Catholic schools. My dad was very involved in his parish, doing all kinds of things. And I think his love for the Mass and the Eucharist kind of flowed over to me. It always just seemed very regular and the right thing to do.
Mm-hmm. So an influence there. And how about your mom? What kind of influence did she have on you as you grew up?
My mom was a very quiet, lovely woman, and she was very helpful with all of us. I think she was learning the faith at the same time we were learning the faith. And I will say that when I told my parents that I was going to enter the convent, my mom was afraid because she didn't quite know what to expect. But once she got to meet the sisters and once we got to talk about what it meant, she then embraced that wholeheartedly. My father was beside himself with joy that one of his kids would become either a priest or a sister.
So kids, there were other kids in the family, you had siblings.
I have three brothers, all of whom are married. They all have kids.
Okay.
And they all live in this area, which is great.
Oh, okay. So you're the only girl in the family.
And the oldest.
And the oldest girl. Okay. So it sounds like you guys were active in your parish, that your Catholic faith was kind of just a normal part of your life growing up. Catholic school?
Yes. We all went from kindergarten through high school. I actually went to Catholic school in undergraduate degree as well. But yes, and that was a sacrifice my parents made to keep us in Catholic school and make sure that we had a strong faith.
And it was in Catholic school that you would be exposed to religious sisters, and they were Dominicans.
They were Dominicans, exactly.
So can you, when you think back at those, like, say, elementary years, did you aspire to be one of them as you were growing up?
You know, I can't say that I ever told anybody I wanted to be one of them, but I have to believe that they planted the seed. They were wonderful women and very engaging and good teachers. And I think that during the time I lived, which was in the 50s, 1950s and 60s, that they just were wonderful role models. And so while, again, I don't know that I told anybody at that point I wanted to be a sister. I know, remember when I was like in second or third grade, I said I was going to become a nun when I was older. You know, I just think it was became a part of me.
Because it wasn't that unusual that,
right.
You know, a child would say that. Because we've had guests, many guests from that same generation and similar things, you know, whether they were young boys, same thing. Priesthood would make it on the list right next to firefighter and astronaut, you know.
Exactly.
It was just in the mix. So.
Yeah, a good Catholic family would send somebody in their family to become a priest or a sister.
Was it ever encouraged by your family at home? Did they talk about vocations much?
No, not very much to that I can remember. Now, my brothers are quite a bit younger than I am.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I was out of the household when they were, several of them were growing up. So it could be that there was some discussion there.
Okay, but not so much overtly. So it was just something that maybe was, you know, somewhere on the radar, not dead center, but somewhere maybe in the back of the mind. Made, let's say it made your short list
as
a young child.
Yeah.
So as you got older, you know, after, you know, grade school and middle school, you start going to high school. And in your case, it was Newark Catholic High School.
Yes.
So was it still on the short list in high school?
Vocation? No, I think it was pretty much not there at that point. I had one teacher who was a librarian, and I thought, oh, I want to become a librarian. I had a wonderful basketball coach, and oh, I wanted to be a coach and teach physical education. So I think that those were other things that I thought were pretty exciting to do at the time.
All right, so pretty typical high school experience. You're in your activities, have a lot of interests, and you would graduate high school in 1970.
Yes.
So logical, maybe next step is college. So what were you thinking about? Like what, and all those interests, were you starting to narrow it down and say, okay, I think I might pursue this. And so what did you do then?
Well, I actually went to school and studied physical education and English and coaching. And when I graduated in 74, I had an opportunity to go to graduate school at Indiana University, and the degree was physical education again. And so I was focusing in on women's athletics at this point because I felt that women had needed an opportunity to participate just like men did.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a time when that very idea was starting to ferment, and there was a program called Title IX, which required colleges and universities to provide opportunities for women in athletics.
Right. Some of our listeners may be familiar with the movie The Mighty Max.
Yep.
The Immaculata High School story, which, you know, is where, like you say, the women were starting to compete for the first time in a college level. So you were really a pioneer.
I was pretty early in on that. And it was exciting because we started an athletic program for this small Catholic Benedictine college that I worked for. And we weren't so great. I don't think we were very good, but we did have a competitive schedule. And I think at that time, what was important, too, is to help women learn not only how to win graciously, but how to lose graciously.
Very important.
And that while we can be fierce competitors on the field or the court, we still had to be respectful of each other. And afterwards, then we let it go. And I think that's a very valuable lesson that people, all men and women, boys and girls, learn in athletics.
Yeah, absolutely. So what was happening with your faith life during those college, undergraduate, graduate years? You know, what a lot of people, if it's going to happen, it often happens in those years where they'll fall from the faith. They'll fall away. They'll get caught up in everything else going on. What was happening with your faith life?
Well, I think sort of the same thing was happening. There were so many other things to do. And I would periodically go to Mass because I went to a Catholic undergrad, and then I was working in a Catholic college. So I would go. And I always believed in God and believed God was a part of my life. But the church, not so much. There were a lot of other things to do instead. And that continued for quite a while. When I came home, I would certainly go to Mass with my folks and everything. But I lived in Chicago and Indianapolis and other places, and it wasn't that important.
So it wasn't like a faith crisis. You weren't doubting the existence of God. It just wasn't something, you know, a big priority at that point.
That's exactly the case. I mean, I knew, in fact, I prayed still. But just going to church wasn't that big a deal.
Right. And I personally, and I'm sure many of our listeners can identify with that, a stage of our life where that just doesn't, it's on the back burner.
Just
on the back burner.
Right.
So as you said, you mentioned that you went to Indiana University for the master's in physical education. You were in Chicago. You're getting this teaching job, this coaching job, which had been really rewarding and exciting to see, you know, empowering these young women to pioneer this new field. Did that for 5 years. And just in case we're just tuning in, we're talking with Sister Barb Kane of the Dominican Sisters of Peace, and she's sharing her vocation story here on Answering the Call on St. Gabriel Catholic Radio, AM 820, and I'm Elizabeth Piccicelli, your host. So, Sister Barb, then what happened next after this, 5 year period where you're teaching and coaching? What was kind of the next step?
Well, I had an opportunity to go to work for, at the time, it was Illinois Bell, part of the Bell system. And in a program that they were hiring women to do non-traditional jobs. So I ended up being a supervisor for a construction crew. That put up the wires and hooked them together and all that other stuff.
I'm just picturing, did you still wear your whistle?
Yeah, no, it might have helped though. No, but I wore a hard hat to climb up telephone poles. I did that for a while, and I had an opportunity after that particular phase to go into marketing, basically, in the telephone company. At that point, it had turned into Ameritech, and when they broke up the Bell system. That was one of the regional companies. And I was doing all kinds of marketing and product management, and I liked it a lot. I mean, I learned many good things. And I was moving up the ladder, quite frankly, and making a lot of money and doing a lot of fun things. And but after, I thought, is this all I'm ever going to do? Am I ever going to just work for the next promotion or the next vacation or the next house or the next whatever? And something kind of snapped in me, I think, that I didn't want it to be that way. Now, I wasn't quite sure what was going on with that, but it seemed like I had to start looking at something different. And so I was able to get a transfer back from Chicago to Columbus. My folks were getting older. And I decided when I came back, actually I had started going back to Mass towards the end there, and I decided when I moved back to Columbus, I would jump in with both feet back into my faith.
Yeah, and I want to break this down a little, because this is obviously a big turning point. And so I don't forget to ask this question, because as you're leading us to now in your story, there's this awakening happening. And yeah, and the fact that you're sitting across a table from me today and you're a sister of peace, we kind of see where that's going to go. But before we leave your secular professional world, when you look back at your teaching coaching experience and that work with Illinois Bell and work at the construction company and marketing, what do you think that experience gave you that will help you now today in your current vocation?
Well, I had experience with working with people, managing people, doing marketing kinds of work, motivating folks, being patient, learning to listen, business. You know, I got an MBA somewhere along the line there. So I think all of those different skills contribute to whatever I'm going to do here. And I've been fortunate that I've done some different management kinds of jobs since I've entered the congregation.
Okay.
So I think that it brings that to the picture. But I also think it brings, if you look back, relationships that I had and people who maybe they didn't know it, and I certainly didn't know it, were being God's image in my life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like my parents. I mean, my parents were certainly that. But other people I work with who had strong faiths, and not necessarily Catholic faiths, but Christian faiths or Jewish faiths, who I saw how they were and how they were with me. And I think all of that contributed to, for me, an openness to people, but also to see God working in my life.
Yeah.
I didn't know it, but God was there.
And as you were starting to get this point, like you say, this awakening, is this all there is, the next promotion, or what am I working for? Was marriage on the radar? Did you consider marriage through those years?
Yeah, I always thought I was going to get married. And in fact, I always thought my husband and I were going to go off and be missionaries somewhere,
mm-hmm.
which I think is interesting because I never thought of myself as going off and being a missionary by myself, but my husband and I were going to do that.
Yeah.
But then I dated and but I never met the right guy. And, I don't know, maybe I didn't try hard enough to meet the right guy, or maybe I wasn't destined to meet the right guy.
Yeah. Well, you met the really right guy.
Right. Exactly.
And he is your partner in your ministry work,
yeah,
obviously. So when you went through this period where you were kind of questioning everything, was there any one thing that happened that kind of led you to start going back to Mass and thinking about God again? Or was it just this kind of inner feeling like, well, maybe I should just return to my roots, and what was it that put you in that direction at that point?
I think that I probably missed some of that, and that I wanted to see if that's where God was sending me. I wasn't sure that that's where God was sending me, but I didn't know. I think you made a good point, back to my roots,
mm-hmm.
where I had experiences and I knew about it. Now, understand, I missed the whole Vatican II thing. So when I went back to church, it was different.
Oh, yeah.
And for me personally, it was a very positively different church. And so I think it was just God saying, Barb, you're feeling like something is missing, and I'm it. Mm. I'm what's missing. So go search for me again.
So that would bring you back to Ohio, and you got involved with St. Agatha's Parish.
Yep.
And as you said, jumped in both feet.
Right.
You were all in.
All in. So Eucharistic minister, CCD teacher, RCIA, lector, you name it, and I did it. They wanted me to be on a committee, I would be on a committee. And I was happy. It became a community. It became a family for me, and I met many wonderful people through that experience. But the one person I met who now has made a huge difference was Sister Mary Catherine Kempner, who was the RCIA director. And she said to me at one point that she thought I would be a good Dominican. Now I'm like, I don't really think so. But, she planted the seed. And I quite frankly couldn't figure out how it would happen.
Right.
I had too much stuff. I was too used to living alone. I mean, how would I ever take a vow of obedience? Much less poverty. I mean, the chastity thing I think I could deal with, but the other two were pretty daunting to me. But she was an amazing, amazing woman. I would call her a lower S saint, somebody who really epitomizes what holiness is about and what following Jesus was about. And I think it made a difference for me. And so at that point, I said, okay, I'll start talking about it.
Okay. Yeah. And so to kind of explore that further, mm-hmm. To see, God, is this what, I feel like I'm doing the right thing, serving your church, being active in this parish and among the people, but are you calling me to something deeper? So what was your next step to explore that?
Right. So my question was God calling me to be a sister, or was God calling me to work in the church? And so I got a job at Holy Name with Monsignor Jim Roof as a part-time parish, secretary practically. And he was wonderful. He let me try a lot of different things. And I was even helping him with RCIA just a little bit. And I loved working in the parish, but I realized it really was something even more than that. And so at that point, I was sort of simultaneously exploring religious life with my spiritual director and then with Sister Margie Davis at the congregation.
And it was your spiritual director who would kind of ask you a provocative question or answer a question right. that had been on your mind and
right.
be that nudge forward.
So I had been thinking about this a lot, and I at one point went into my spiritual director and I said to her, how do you know when you have a vocation? And she said, when you can't stop thinking about it. Well, I burst into tears. I cried for 2 weeks, because it was like, how could this possibly happen to me of all people? God, you've duped me now and you want me to, to be this sister. But once I get over it and I started to really explore it and really move in that direction, everything fell into place. All the barriers I tried to put up just crumbled away. And I started talking to more and more of the sisters, and I felt like that's really where I belonged. And I still feel that way.
And so you would apply, like you said, the barriers dissolve. You'd apply and enter as a candidate in 2001.
Mm-hmm.
And part of the application process was to write a spiritual biography. So what's that?
Right. Well, I recommend everybody to do this. It is just to look over your life and see all the places and people and events that God had a hand in. So if I go back, and I of course said my parents were a part of that, but then I also see, my Catholic school experiences, my work experiences and people who I came into contact with. I had one couple that I worked with, and they were not Catholic, they were Christian, but they invited me to a walk through the Bible. And somehow that triggered something in me that I needed to move closer towards God. But all of those different things, and it made it very clear that God had been there in the good times and the bad over and over again. So I think everybody should do that.
And not only had he been there in your case, but that you could kind of see where he was leading you on this journey
yeah.
to a religious vocation.
Mm-hmm.
So 2 years later, you did your novitiate year at St. Louis, Missouri.
Yep.
Then you returned to Columbus and taught at Bishop Watterson High School for 4 years while still in formation. So again, you know, I love how God honors the desires of our heart. Well, I guess he puts those desires there, but you were drawn to teaching, and mm-hmm. there you are teaching again. Then you made your final profession, and your first mission was an assignment in New York City. Sounds kind of interesting.
Yes, I was asked by the congregation to go and be the principal of our girls' high school in New York City. It's Dominican Academy, and it was an amazing experience working with these very talented girls. And one of the things I was most proud of is our theology program there and also our service program, and helping the girls not only develop a firm foundation in their faith, but also see how they needed to live out that faith through service to others, whether it's working in a soup kitchen or advocating for a program to be removed from a radio station that was sort of not doing what it said, or any kind of advocacy work. Mm. And then, of course, lots and lots of charity. So drives for everything. But I was very proud of that program. It was very powerful for me and for the girls.
Oh, sounds like it.
Yeah.
And then for the past 3 years, you've been back in Columbus, and you're serving as the director of the Dominican Learning Center.
Yeah.
So what does that entail?
Well, the Dominican Learning Center is an adult literacy center, and we have two programs, English as a Second Language, as well as adult basic education, in particular folks who did not finish a high school diploma and need to take a high school equivalency test. So we have about 260, 70 people. We have our ESL program almost all of our tutors are volunteer, so over 180 volunteer tutors, and they do ESL in libraries, and then the GED ABE program is at our center over by Corpus Christi Parish in the basement area. We just started a couple years ago, we started a new program with some parishes where we're partnering with the parish, and they provide the facility and the tutors and the students from their parish. We provide the training and the materials and all that good stuff. And it's a win-win-win-win for everybody, because parishioners are helping parishioners at their parish. And so we're excited about that. We started at Christ the King. Last year, we're at St. Mary Magdalene, St. Agnes. And this year, we're starting at St. Peter's.
Wow, that's awesome. And, you know, Columbus has become such a melting pot. I'm from New York originally. I used to think that was a melting pot, but Columbus, too. So we have a lot of people in the community who speak many languages and are learning English. So, you know, someone is listening to this and saying, that sounds like something I'd really like to volunteer and be a part of. How can they do that?
Well, they can go to our website, domlearningcenter.com, and they can check us out. And we have tutor training once a month. In fact, Saturday we have tutor training. And or just give us a call, and they can talk. We can tell them what it's all about. It's a really rewarding experience. Even if you've never been a teacher, we make sure you get trained and have the support you need to do a good job.
Oh, sounds great. And you also work on the Peace and Nonviolence Committee as well?
I'm on that committee also, and we are trying to find ways to contribute to the peaceful Columbus, a peaceful world. We do the first Friday of every month what we call our First Friday Fast. So we have some topic of violence in the world that we pray and we fast for, and we invite anybody to be a part of that. It's one day a month, First Friday, and it's a chance to think about places where there is violence in the world and people who are experiencing violence in the world, and just pray and fast for peace.
And it seems like violence is something that is escalating. You know, we see that in our communities, our country. We're so divided. And so here you guys are, women of peace, and looking to find that, establish that peace. I mean, it's everywhere. The opportunities to do that, I think.
Right. Well, the way we got that name, actually, is kind of interesting. We are a merged congregation with seven other Dominican congregations. And when we were trying to figure out what to call ourselves, we had several meetings. And that name, Dominican Sisters of Peace, bubbled up out of nowhere. Nobody had talked about it before. And yet, almost unanimously, we agreed that is where God was calling us to be. Now we're trying to figure out what that all means.
All righty. So, well, that sounds like an exciting journey. I can't wait to see what else that yields. So, Sister Barb Kane, it's been just such a joy listening to your story. We're so delighted you're here in the community in Columbus serving. Would you kindly leave us with your prayer, a thought today?
We ask our generous and gracious God to put within our hearts the love that you have for us. We ask you to help us to see your Son in each other and to live in a way that would reflect that love. And we ask you also to give us wisdom to always speak a kind word to those with whom we come into contact. Amen.
Amen. Again, Sister Barb Kane, Dominican Sister of Peace, we thank you so much for joining us today. This is Elizabeth Ficicelli, host of Answering the Call here on St. Gabriel Catholic Radio, AM 820. Join us every Tuesday and Sunday at 12:30 for another edition as we talk to priests and deacons and religious about their spiritual journey and how they're answering the call. You have a wonderful week. God bless you.
Answering the Call is a production of listener-supported St. Gabriel Catholic Radio, AM 820. Archives of Answering the Call with Elizabeth Ficicelli are available at stgabrielradio.com.